You can see the whole world, and the whole world is gray. Flat, gray cloud, slate steel ocean, freezing waves shattering on the wide gray beach, and then tired gray grass running from the wind into the night dark forest. All of it misty, gray, light, dark. All of it empty. Empty, except for you, walking down that long, wide beach. Just you and someone behind you. It's so easy to get jumpy, all alone in a strange, empty place like this. So hard to judge distances. Whoever it is must be far, far behind you, right? Something about this gray light stretches them out, though. Makes them look much taller than they could be. You try to walk faster, but the sand is so soft it feels like each step sinks backward. The sand sprays cold on your ankles, gets into your boots. You know you'll have bleeding blisters when you take them off. You look behind you again, and it's funny how this mist distorts. The figure seems much closer than they were before. Much, much closer. And they look like they're running, but not the way that running should look. You trot down to the top of the wet sand, and you keep trotting, but dismiss the urge to drop your heavy pack and sprint. I mean, who really cares if the other person catches up to you, right? It's just some jogger or hiker, just some other person, nothing else. Nothing else it could be but another person. Right? You look back again, determined to chase your fear away. But as it turns out, it's fear that's chasing you. Because what you see behind you, closer than it could possibly be, is a buried legend. Here we are again, here in this dim, book-lined study where we've already heard the first two parts of the buried legend that we're calling Fool's Gold. If you haven't heard them yet, you might want to go back and listen. Then you'll hear all about the sailor, wrecked on the Washington coast back in 1911, found out of his mind but clutching ancient gold doubloons in his fists. Doubloons that people said must have come from Sir Francis Drake's long-lost haunted treasure. In the second episode, we met a man who'd found a thin stack of old papers that promised to point him right to that treasure. And now we'll join him out there on a wide Washington beach on a cold, gray winter's day. He'd flown out to Washington just days after he'd found the old routier, the old navigator's log that hinted where the treasure of 400 years ago lay buried. He'd spent weeks driving every mile of coast that roads would reach, and then he'd hiked the long stretches where the road veers inland and leaves the beach to itself. And in one of those places, he'd finally found them. Found the headlands whose shape matched the ones sketched in faded ink 4 centuries ago, pointing toward the place where the treasure lay. And then he'd began to measure and guess and plan and dream. Daydreams of gold, silver, the things he'd buy with it. And dreams at night as well. Dreams of the treasure, of course, but strange, dark visions. He was nervous. The anticipation, that was it. That was why every night his dreams of the treasure turned into nightmare, shadowed by an unseen menace. Waking him in gasping sweats. Every day he drove to the little parking lot at the end of the road, at the edge of the beach. And every day, all day, he walked the wide, endless gray sands, measuring, searching. Every night in a sandy little motel, he pored over and over the faded pages of Drake's old log, testing every clue. Until at last, he found it. It was a day like all the others before it. The surf far away on one hand, the misty darkness of the bluffs far away on the other, the wide expanse of sand between, and he was the only moving thing on it. He walked a long, long way. The beach remained the same, no matter how far he went. And he came to one of the small streams of fresh water that cut through the sand at intervals, a stream he hadn't explored yet. So he followed its meanders through the sand, up to where it cut through the thick beach grass. The grass always made him a little sad for some reason. It seemed to be waving forever, goodbye, 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 to the endless wind. Anyway, it never got more than hip high. Walking in the cold water of the stream, he passed through it easily. But then he reached the forest. Here, where all the rain of a vast, clouded ocean found the first thing like soil, life ran riot. A solid wall of leaves and moss, so green they left shadows in his eyes when he closed them. Vines and bushes and creepers and little trees crisscrossing their finger-thick branches, trapping his legs hopelessly when he tried to step through them. But where the creek poured out of the forest onto the beach, it had eroded a tiny gap for itself. Stooping onto his hands and knees, soaking wet, scrambling, crawling, he managed to drag himself under the tangle and up the creek, into a tunnel of plant life, lit a dim green, deeper than twilight. And after some hard crawling yards, the vines above opened up a little bit, just enough for him to stand in a low stoop. The black-barked pines here hid countless centuries in their wind-twisted swirls and swoops, bending over, crowding all around him. After a rummaging moment, he carried on, counting his steps, his ears now pressed by headphones connected to the metal-detecting wand in his hand. He found a bolt, a rusted steel can, the clasp of some long rotted garment. He beeped his way deeper and deeper into the past, wondering how this miscellaneous trash had come to be in a place as lonely as this. Unlikely as it seemed, others had been here for their own obscure reasons, but not many people, and they hadn't stayed long. Then he ripped off his headphones and whirled around. He ran several stooping strides back down the creek bed, looking at the brush on either side, listening, hard, staring all around. He knew he'd seen a shadow move behind him, move against the brighter green that glowed down there where the creek poured onto the beach. But no, it was impossible. There was nowhere to hide back here. The brush on either side was too thick to slip into. There was no one else here. No one following him. Just nerves. That's a good sign, actually, nerves. He must be getting close. Really close. At last. So he turned back around. Started swinging the metal detector again. And not five more steps up the creek bed. It happened. A faint signal at first, just beside the water. And when he dug, the ground showed nothing but little red stains where iron had once lived. Nails, maybe. But a step or two further, and a few shovelfuls deeper, and suddenly, a sun that had set 400 years ago was rising. A golden sun, many suns, fistfuls of golden suns tinkling heavily against each other as his shovel poured them out. More of them, and more, and more, and more, and more. When he'd scooped enough of the gleaming coins from the sandy ground, there could be no mistake. When they lay piled and scattered around his squatting feet. He sat back on his heels. Then he fell down on his hind side in the cold running stream, and he sobbed. He sobbed out loud. Great unexpected cries wrenched from his gut. This was his whole life. His whole life. So many years lived just for this moment. He'd never known. He'd never known what it would mean to his heart to dig this moment out of the ground and sit surrounded by its shimmering glow. He cried so much and so hard he was afraid he'd never stop. But he did, and rather suddenly. He bit down on a half-tasted sob and he stared into the dimness, upstream this time. Again, he'd swear, movement where there couldn't be any. Not the rustle of brush like a small animal, but a large, looming shadow. And something like, he tore his headphones off. Something like voices. But he listened, and he looked, and there was nothing. Just his nerves again, surely. Just a nervous reaction to his own excitement. That was it. Still, there was no reason to stay numbing his bum in this stream. He scrabbled back onto his knees, and he did what he'd always planned on doing. Of course, he was bound by the law to report what he'd found. But then, he'd done all the work. He'd wandered the globe. He'd spent so many precious years tracking tortuous legends and hints and rumors of different treasures across centuries and continents, only to peer into so many empty holes. Why should he waste whole decades while courts and nations impounded this treasure, squabbling over jurisdiction and salvage rights, eroding the work of his lifetime? So instead of putting up with all that, he simply opened his hefty pack and scooped it in. Scooped it in by the handful, gobbled it up. Gold, silver, muddy jewelry glimpsed through his fingers as he shoveled it into his bag's gaping mouth. He paused now and then to admire some little thing that caught his imagination. An imagination so heightened by excitement that it insisted on continuing to hear and to see, never directly, someone with him in that forest. Someone, something that he knew wasn't really there. His pack was barely half a clinking with his future happiness when he stopped, closed it. Gold is a heavy, heavy metal. He hefted the bag with both hands and found that the fabric strained but held. He had a long hike back to the car, so he wasn't going to overdo it. He'd come back for more tomorrow, or tonight even. No, then again, maybe a light would attract unwanted attention. Yeah, tomorrow then, tomorrow. This place had kept it secret for 400 years. It was good for another night or two. He wasn't going to be hasty. He wasn't going to make any greedy mistakes. Except, of course, the one he'd already made. And every mistake comes with a cost. We'll find out all about that next time, in the conclusion of this story, so aptly named Fool's Gold. We're experimenting with this format of breaking our stories up into episodes that are shorter and punchier than the full-length ones we do on our Camp Monsters podcast. If you like the shape of these tales, leave a good review. If you don't, well, come on. Don't be like that. Don't leave a comment like that. Just send an email to buriedlegendspodcast@gmail.com. We'll get the message. That's also a great place to send any legends you might want us to unearth. You never know what we'll find. If you want to find our senior producer, Chelsea Davis, a good place to start looking is on those wide Washington Coast beaches. She loves taking long, quiet, thoughtful strolls along the majestic... Well, actually, she spends most of her time trying to keep her dog from eating dead crabs.
Drop it! Drop it!
Nick Patry, our engineer, hails from the middle of the Midwest, and he still isn't convinced that the ocean is really real. But I finally got him 96% of the way convinced that I'm real. Yours truly, Weston Davis, writer and host. And of course, these buried legends that we dig up are just legends. Some people claim to have had similar experiences, but it's up to you to pick the gold from the fool's gold. Thanks for listening. Subscribe if you haven't already. Leave a nice review. Tell your friends. And join us again for the next episode, coming soon.